Your mighty lions from Zion, ignite the flame of what I am. Tossing fire, leaving power, and trying to escape this futile. Who child, this country jungle is too wild. That's why we got more than two styles. To adapt in the situation, too sharp. And though the road is rocky, I'm ready to try. The next mile, to bring sight to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Jungleist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven, fire from his lips. Burn the same driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media, for the new millennia. This is History and Current Events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom. With all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream at that location. Or you could go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and catch the live stream there also. You can go to OurRadioNetwork.com. Again, that's OurRadioNetwork.com. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your devices. TuneIn is a free app. And then at TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program, with a live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening Media. Interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also check out that Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. Various African language classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 8:07 here on this Friday evening in the city of Philadelphia, and we're in freestyle Friday mode here on Time for an Awakening. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call. We'll talk about it this evening. And you can participate in that conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m., for podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:12 here in the city of Philadelphia on this chilly Friday evening. And before we get started with our program, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
Hey, Elliot, this I'm going to say the week has been beautiful. You know, I'm really, really interested about how this temperature fluctuation going on now. I don't know what that's about. But this morning, as I mentioned to you earlier, it was a little technology, like was saying, I think we're going to take a break from you today. and it just, everything just like shut down. And I'm like, man, phone went off, the computer went off. And it made me really think, like, how much we are connected to these things at, in this point in our, in this point in time and in our lives. I mean, it's something. But other than that, overall, everything is good. I want to, if you don't mind, for us to, you know, as a part of Time for Awakening, express, you know, another, I'm going to say, legacy has left us in the gene pool of Mr. Garvey. Marcus Garvey Jr. Mm-hmm. Passed away this week. So, you know, just acknowledging, you know, another answer, another one going to the ancestors, and hopefully giving us strength in that dimension, so that we can continue to carry out the work in this dimension. But overall, everything else is good.
I think he was 90 or something, wasn't he?
Yeah,
90, in his 90s. Yeah. It is, Julius Garvey is almost around that age, if I'm not mistaken.
I you know what? Now, I'm you know, been in his presence, you know, very, very few times. I mean, a few times. And to me, you know how some people, when they age, when they get up in age, you can see it. And I think just seen him, you know, not too long ago. And it must have been virtually. But I know a few years ago was actually in his presence. And until I seen that, I would have never known he was, you know, that old. Vibrant, you know, always spoke powerfully.
Okay.
In that sense. So it's just amazing, you know, that the energy we have, and especially when we're carrying on, because he always was, you know, a continuation along with Julius, in the spirit of maintaining the importance of us staying focused on, you know, Africa as a continent and us as a people, you know, recognizing that is our, you know, place where our power lies and where our organizing should be, and that we should never be subservient to any other people. As a member, you know, a living legacy of the Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Community League, he was always, adamant in making sure that we be clear of what the vision is, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the struggle continues, Richard. We were talking about things last week, and, you know, more things happened this week. So it's just, it's a continuous struggle. We look back and, you know, we see that some of our people, a segment of our people, had a euphoria about the election and Trump being run out of office, although he's still there right for right now. Mm-hmm. And that euphoria now that is starting to wear off, and I hope people are keeping a scorecard, they can see that this is basically going to be business as usual. It's nothing changed, just the faces, mm-hmm. face or faces that's in the legislative body. But the policies are basically still going to remain the same. Exactly. And we talked about that briefly last Sunday, and we'll talk about it again tonight. I got an audio I wanted to play in reference to that meeting that Trump had with certain civil rights leaders across the country, and black elected officials were there, and civil rights people were represented. I heard him mention in particular the head of the NAACP and Sharpton, and it was other people there too, but he mentioned their names. Particularly
Trump or Biden?
No, I'm talking about Biden. They met with Biden this week, you know, about some of his appointments and how they were disappointed in you know, his black appointments. I guess they expected more from him. So he kind of addresses all of those things.
I don't know what they expected.
Well, he addresses it kind of in his conference. And I guess he said more to people in other venues, but they happened to catch this watchdog group or whatever managed to get some of the audio and then put it out there. So I'm going to share that with the listening audience in a short while. And there's some things happening locally, too, that's of interest. We got a couple callers that jumped on the line here, so let me go to them early and get the little things here. Go to 267. 267?
Yes, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard.
How are you, sir?
It is indeed a pleasure, brother. Looking for a better year in 21, you know, a couple of days away from it. I want to make a comment talking about politics on the federal level, you know. You talk about the politics on the state level. Let's talk about the politics on the local level. City Council will be going into a recess. It'll probably start it today, and it will return off its research. I'm sorry. It will return off of its recess, I guess, the end of July. End of June. Oh, my God, I'm tired, you know. End of January. I know I'm tired. End of January. And, brothers, I'm going to say this. Because we all see South Philly people, you know, and we got the whole city that we look at. South Philly is just another segment of what Wingfield and West Oak Lane and North Philly is like, and down the bottom and whatever the areas that you recall them. But brother, we're in a dilemma now with city council and the tax abatement. Now, you know, people were bragging. You know, they were up with their voice loud and talking about the 9 members of city council that were black.
Mm-hmm.
And they felt as though they were going to be so progressive in bringing about a change. And bringing about that change means that when you have a tax abatement, that not only are you dealing with not having schools in your community, those schools like a Smith, Richard, when you pass Smith, you got to have your eyeballs almost popping out of your head. Smith is a playground is going to be filled with housing and an old school, or Elliot, a school like Arthur at one time looked like one thing, not looked like upscale for some reason, or a school, let's see, it's another element, or a school like Benson that one time was at 27th and and Wharton Street is now flat. It's just flat ground. Or it's around the city, all around the city.
I think that the elementary school I went to, Pierce, at 24th and Christian, if I'm not mistaken, that's like condos or something. Did they make that like condos, Richard?
Yeah,
do you know?
So, and the school I went to, the high school, Bach, that's a whole business incubator.
Exactly.
Those of us who graduated from there, no one will even know. For what it is now.
Right. Here's the other thing. The other thing, we could take it from the schools to a mom and pop store we realized now we know how important they were. Elliot, you know, your dad was a businessman, entrepreneur, you know, a beautiful man. We could talk about your father, El, but then we're going to go to the schools, we went to the businesses, the people that look like us, they're all in the neighborhood, Dominican, Asian, and things of that nature. Then we're going to get into the housing, how a person can come in your neighborhood and try to convince you to sell a house for maybe $200,000. He comes back and sells it for $500,000. I'm talking about the tax, continued tax rebatement. Nobody in city council should ever let that go down. It should not be no 10 years. It shouldn't be no years at all. At least reduce it from 10. There's no way that anybody on city council, if we go into next year, should have anything that there'd be a 10-year tax abatement. It should not be no. I'm telling you, if they look like us, and they went to one of them schools, which most of them did, and they lived in one of those neighborhoods, which one of them did, male or female, council at large or a district council seat, I don't care, a president of city council should never let there'd be a 10-year tax abatement and not look you in the face. They shouldn't be able to come out of their own house.
Well, Brother Tim, let me throw some light on that. And for listeners that don't know, here in Philadelphia, they got a 10-year tax abatement for these gentrified neighborhoods. So when these white folks move into areas that was predominantly black before, and they redo the neighborhoods with zoning changes and everything else, they don't pay taxes on their home for 10 years. Now, if you remember Brother Tim, and Richard, when, see, because for a while there, and Tim, you were active in community, and you ran for public office at one time.
That's right.
You know that a lot of people, if your neighborhood wasn't being gentrified, you wasn't aware of the dynamic of what was going on. But through different neighborhood activists getting out here screaming about these white folks that's been moving in, don't pay no property taxes for 10 years, then all of a sudden it start leaking out, and it was an embarrassment to these black elected officials. So when they ran this time, a lot of them ran under the banner that they was going to eliminate that 10-year tax abatement. Now, after they went in, they won office in, what, in October or something like that when they won some of those seats? Or no, it was before that. It was in May or something when they had the elections, wasn't it?
Right.
And they went in. I think the council now is overwhelmingly black. It was basically black before, but I think they gained a couple more seats with the independent woman that went in and a couple other people. So now all of a sudden they done flipped the script, Richard. Let me read this because I think it's what Brother Tim is talking about. This came out of the published report 2 days ago. It says Philly's new building tax abatement changes hopes to pay for more affordable housing, which is bull crap, but I'll read this anyway. As part of a plan to finance $400 million in bonds in an anti-poverty measure, Philly City Council moved toward enacting several tax laws Tuesday night. In a marathon committee, a whole meeting council voted to approve a 1% development impact tax on constructions, 1%, to delay the 10-year tax abatement. So they're not going to, they said that they was going to end it December of this year. They're not going to end it now. And also to reduce the tax abatement for commercial construction projects from 100% to 90%. So they're going to reduce the tax abatement for the people doing the construction, reduce their taxes, and to support a $400 billion bond package called the Neighborhood Preservation Initiative. According to Darrell Clark, the first reading was December the 3rd and passed on December the 10th. Spokesperson Darrell Clark said. So here we go. That now they're going to delay the tax abatement after they promised the community they was going to get rid of it. So who's really in charge?
Mm-hmm. And listen with what you say, the way I process that, right? They're going to delay taking taxes, and a bond is borrowing. So they're going to borrow money, right, in order to deal with poverty, right? And this here poverty plan, I believe that they pushed out. They were saying that they were going to be able to work to eliminate, take 100,000 people out of poverty. But in order to do that, they're going to place this bond, which you're borrowing. So you don't borrow for free, not in America, right? There's an interest tag to it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're borrowing money, which they're going to deal with interest to address in a city that has over a million people, maybe. And I think it's like 600,000.
Yeah.
600,000.
Over a million and a half people. Yeah.
Yeah. That live in the city now, which we were the majority number now. Focus on supposedly lifting 100,000 out of poverty, which when they're saying that the tax abatement is really not just for the buyers of the home, because it stimulates the developers, don't it? In order to be able to build the home.
Most definitely.
Which means that they still, you know.
And they're getting a reduction in their taxes.
Right.
from 100% to 90%.
And about the sections of the city. So if they're going to abate it and the developers are still developing, that means they still see some places that they can gentrify.
Oh, certainly.
Now, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, look at what they're building. I mean, with the stuff that they're replacing, that they tore down a church or that they built in another part of the school, or that they require some land from a lot, the stuff is nothing but paper mache. All me and you need to do, Elliot and Richard, is take some nails and some hammers.
I'm done.
And start nailing them, and it seems like it ain't going to last over 50 years. Matter of fact, I know people right now who moved in these houses right now, they always talk about they got buckets because stuff is leaking. You see the stucco coming off the front of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They don't have a firewall in between them. They want them, and they don't even, listen, do they stay in there 10 years?
No.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Most of their children in daycares. By the time their children get of age, by the time they 4 or 5, they out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't no schools here. Ain't no land. Mm-hmm. Not unless they take them out of the city and take them into something. Where they going? They're here for that little bit of time. And they split. Tell me, they sit
yeah,
down.
Yeah, but see,
and
they don't want them
they don't
to.
Discuss this. They don't discuss this main idea. It's so simple that what you got to do, I think, a vote to say, we don't want it. I don't care if the president don't like it or the mayor. If the city council say, look, we against it. That's all you got to say. Am I right? If you got 9 people and the president
yeah,
say,
but
oh,
see,
I can't deal with them. The president says to the mayor, I can't deal with that. The mayor says to the president, oh, we can't go with it. We can't have a tax rebate, man. Or are they saying, I'm with you, boss, on the plantation? What are they saying?
Oh, well, you got the answer to that.
You know, it's another perspective that when you mentioned about the demolition of those buildings that bothers me from the perspective of, you know, as you say, Elliot, I'm at the African American Museum in Philadelphia. So as a docent who, you know, and prides themselves in trying to, you know, give the historical narrative, especially around Black Philadelphia, which is what it was chartered to do. By losing a lot of, you know, what you said, as far as the churches, you know, some of them churches I've seen, churches and school, but you've seen the cornerstones, they go back to 1880,
mm-hmm.
1870. So here are our buildings, that they just wipe out, which wipes out the history of a people who've been here. So the generations that come up, you know, Tim, they won't even know that unless we tell them, you know, and when I say we, I'm looking at the collective we, unless we have some way of being able to transfer that information about our historical presence, they won't even know we were here. Because those buildings, those, as you say, those timber, them timber boxes that they got, 2x4, you know, that they selling for $300,000 and like that, you know, and because they got a deck, you know, looking at the skyline, our children won't even know Black people actually were a part of the fiber of this city. And I would say that's in D.C., in Maryland, I mean, Baltimore, and I mean, Detroit, this is in New York, you know, New York City. This is not some phenomenon that's just happening in Philly. This is a well-coordinated plan from Vermont down to South Carolina.
Hey, but Rich, I'm going to say something to you. I'm going to tell you how important Philadelphia is and all that, though. Philadelphia is about the only city that you have. You can walk from here to Center City. You can walk from North Philly to Center City, South Philly to Center City, and West Philly to Center City in certain areas. You right. can't do that in Harlem. You can't do that in areas of the country. That's the importance of Philadelphia.
Hey,
the first White House and all that kind of stuff. You can walk certain parts of South Philly, North Philly, West Philly, and call what they call the first White House or whatever, or the sixth, what is it? where the voice was, that's the sixth ward. All the historical that goes on. You know what I'm saying? You certain areas, you can walk from Coltrane's house for a certain area. You could all, there's so many different areas that Philadelphia possessed that was so historical when it came to black people. You know what I'm saying? And I want to say, you know, I want to say, I'm gonna end it up with this. I didn't see the documentary on MOVE. I think it's called 40 Years a Prisoner. Mm-hmm. But they go all the way back to 78, the first attack on MOVE, as opposed to Osage Avenue. I mean, it started in U.S.
Well, I didn't see it. Not to cut across you. I didn't see it. Yes. But I heard that they didn't even deal with Osage Avenue.
Right, but wait a minute. But I heard that what they dealt with was different, but they said this is it connects it, but they tell you the first attack. And they show you, I haven't seen it, man. I need to see it. They put out the worst of Rizzo in that administration and what those cops were like. And you ask me, the first bomb we got hit with was when they hit MOVE, right? The next bomb was Osage Avenue. The third bomb was drugs and gentrification and race. Those were the bombs. That's how I had to do the attack on MOVE first. Racism was always here.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first was attack on MOVE, Carlton Village. Next was Osage Avenue. Third was that plague called crack. And then after that, you had the different mayors who did certain things. The removal of the cars, the lots. Then after that, you had Nutter with gentrification, on and on and on. And this is where we at right now, progressively. Because progressively, in late 70s, we had 52nd Street, we had Progress Plaza, we had the Northwest, we had down about all those areas that we had. Those were pretty good progressively black own homes and places that people lived in that did pretty well. Affordable housing. Philadelphia had one of the affordable housing with black people. Who, and you're in my generation, Richard and Elliot, who family did the best they could with us, okay, to make us what we are today. Some of us didn't make it, but we did better than a whole lot of people. And I'm saying that. But what we had that we could afford and do, entrepreneurship and education and politics, it just went totally down. And guess what? Black people were in every high position, city council, Congress, mayor, state rep. And when I used to talk to people, they said, you got all those black people running the city? I said, you wouldn't believe it, though.
Yeah.
Thanks for your contribution, bro.
Always a pleasure.
Talk
soon. Hey, it's going to be our year in 21. But tell me what it's going to be like. It's going to be our year in 21, Rich and Elliot, but tell me what it's going to be like.
As long as we're working on it, it's going to be the best year. But the question is, are we working on it?
There it is. That's the question. All right, brothers. Stay strong. Stay focused.
Talk to you.
Happy Kwanzaa coming up. Happy Kwanzaa coming up.
Right. Richard, you know, He raised the issue of gentrification and that you see here they got some type of plan to end blight and poverty. And you got black elected officials in conjunction or cahoots with whites talking about they want to end poverty. This city, just like you said, 1.5 million, maybe 2 million people, 28% of them are in poverty. In deep poverty, and I guess you could say over 50% of the black population is working poor.
Yes.
So you want to end poverty. How? By some of the stuff that they're talking about now in that so-called plan. And plus, Richard, it's something. See, you know, we mentioned earlier when we talk about this misleadership class, and I'm not talking, you know, whites going to do what they're going to do. But they always cultivate these black surrogates, people that look like us, to be overseers at the plantation. Now, you got couple of people this week that was announced to go into some of these cabinet posts. Marsha Fudge, who's a Democrat, I think she was out of Ohio, and this general, Lloyd Austin, right?
Right.
Now, Marsha Fudge is going to be the head of HUD that Ben Carson is now. Now, if you remember, and I hope the listening audience do, about a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, when we were talking about some of the people on the Black Caucus that had been kind of bought and paid for, her name was mentioned. I don't know whether you recall it, Richard, do you?
No, I don't.
Well, I had to go into my bag, because a lot of these articles and all, I just keep. I had to go into my bag, because when I seen her name, it just rung a bell with me. And I'm going to read some of the things that we read a couple of years ago when we talked about her in particular, because she was chair of the, her last position, she was chair of the House Agricultural Subcommittee. She was. Mm-hmm. And they were pushing for her to be the Department of Agriculture Secretary. She ended up being a HUD secretary. Now, let me read what HUD's mission is, because it coincides with what you and Tim were just talking about. It was started in November of 1965 by Lyndon Baines Johnson, Department of Housing and Urban Development. Let me skip down here. HUD's mission, Department of Housing and Urban Development, is a federal agency responsible for national policy and programs to address America's housing needs that improves and develops the nation's communities. HUD's mission is to create a decent home and suitable living environments for all Americans. And it has given America's communities a strong national voice at the cabinet level. HUD plays a major role in supporting ownership and underwriting home ownership through its mortgage insurance programs. And it talks about HUD's major programs. A couple of them I'm going to focus in on. Mortgage and loans through Federal Housing Administration. Mortgage and loans, which is banks, right? Mm-hmm. Community development block grants to help communities with economic development, job opportunities, and housing rehabilitation. Home investment partnership block grants to develop and support housing for residents. Those three things I want to focus in on, because they are the life's blood to gentrification.
Right.
Now.
And wealth.
Exactly. Now, let me read this here, because I'll focus in on that block grant part of it. It says HUD Community Development Block Grants was created in 1974 to assist states and communities combining old narrow categorical programs to federal block grant programs. It is administered by the Community Planning Development Department. CDBG. Which is community development block grant programs, are awarded on a formula basis to a wide range of activities. The funds must be spent to meet one of three broad national goals: prevent or eliminate slum or blight conditions, or meet urgent needs that threatens health or safety, or at least 70% of the funds must be used for activities for moderate income people. Actual uses of the funds are determined by state and local jurisdictions through comprehensive strategic planning. Community development block grants formula allocates 70% of the funds as set-asides or entitlement communities for larger cities with populations over 50,000. and urban counties. 30% of the states, which are distributed to smaller communities. 30% of the funds go to states which are distributed to smaller communities. And the funds are used to renovate houses, construct or improve public facilities, such as water, sewer, streets, neighborhood centers, or to purchase real estate property and assist private businesses in economic development activities. So you see, that's an important office, Richard, to gentrification. Now, she goes in as the head of that department. Why? I'm just curious. And that's a rhetorical question when you look at Marsha Fudge. Now, and again, I want to play that clip, too, from Biden, what he said to these civil rights leaders, and I'll do that shortly. But let me read this, because we did this before on her a couple of years ago, but I had to look for those papers. I just want to read some of this. And this is out of the Jewish Telegraph. This is a Jewish, the Times of Israel. This is a Jewish paper. And it's from February of 2014, Richard. It's entitled Small Town Mayor to Pro-Israel Congresswoman. It says a pro-Israel group brought Marsha Fudge to Israel when she was still the mayor of Warrensville Heights, Ohio. Today she heads the Congressional Black Caucus. Now, this article was from 2014.
Mm-hmm.
It says 6 years ago, Marsha Fudge was the mayor of a small, overwhelmingly African-American town in northern Ohio when she first came to Israel at the invitation of AIPAC. She returned as a congresswoman, this week she returns to Israel as a congresswoman and chair of the Congressional Black Caucus as a avowed supporter of the Jewish state of Israel. I've been impressed, obviously, with what Israel has done over the years, says Fudge. It is related to technology, agriculture, research in general. A lifelong Democrat, told the Times of Israel Wednesday, she and several other caucus members concluded a meeting with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Jerusalem. I find the country fascinating and certainly want to learn more about it. Hold on 1 second. Lost my place. It says, in the early days, Fudge's political career contained very little to indicate that she would one day become a close friend of Israel. A lawyer by training, in 2000, she became the mayor of Cleveland suburb Warrensville Heights, 93% black population. 8 years later, when she was still mayor of a small town with no Jews or Israelis in it, she was invited to come to visit the Holy Land. Now, wait a minute. Check this out now. Let's look at this dynamic. She first got involved in politics in 2000 when she became the mayor of this small town. 93% black population with no Jews in it, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
She's invited to Israel. What? See, that's why I'm saying, man, these people be playing chess and we don't understand a lot of times what be going on. We get involved in the popping circumstance. Oh, get Trump out of there and all types of old foolish slogans. But we don't know what's going on, who these people are. We got to be conscious of who these people are because they don't operate in your interests. Now, I repeat, she was the mayor of this small town and was invited to Israel. No Jews lived in her town. What interest would they have in this small town mayor, a black mayor, a black female that was smart mayor of this small town? But let me continue. 8 years later, when she was still mayor of the small town with no Jews, she was invited to come to Israel and visit the Holy Land. On August 19th, excuse me, I lost my place here. Okay. On August 19th, 2008, the congresswoman from Ohio's 11th District, Stephanie Tubbs Jones, suffered a cerebral hemorrhage and died the next day. Local Democratic leaders elected Fudge to be her successor, and since then, she's won every campaign she's fought. During the week's trip to Israel, Fudge and other members of the Congressional Black Caucus also met with other leaders, Netanyahu. I don't want to read all that. I'll just read this. It says, Fudge said that she's yet to meet an African-American who isn't sympathetic towards Israel. Now, I don't know where she's, what circle she's around, but I just want to repeat that. Fudge said that she has yet to meet an African-American who isn't sympathetic to Israel. I can't speak for the entire black community in the United States, but I would suggest to you that, as with any group of people, you're going to have some who are supportive and others who are not. I don't happen to be in contact with those who are not, she says. Those of us who are supportive. We all see things we wish would be different, but overall we're very supportive. So she let you know that she don't travel around in circles with the average grassroots folks.
And as you say, and it'll be interesting to look, I'm always interested in, and I hope for the Time for Awakening audience, follows up on, to look at, because you give up the demographics of the town that she was the mayor of. So if we was to break down, and we just talked about, you know, the economic.
Now, wait a minute. That's how her career started. It's not there now.
No, but the point of that the concentration, because, in the sense of how do you jump from, and that's, the question I make, because I don't know how big her district is and how the demographics of her district in relationship to black folks for her to be able to win. You know, there's not been no, I haven't seen anything, you know, and I'm not focused at where they say here is one of those, that, because there are black Congress people who come out of majority white districts. So they haven't said that she's one of those representatives at the congressional level that has come out of a majority white district in Ohio, coming from that kind of town. Well, the reason I'm raising that to the point that the article and you implied, what does Israel have to do with the constituency group that she come from?
Nothing. But look at the position she has been in, and look at this position she is in now. Go ahead.
You know, and the only reason, because I was just looking at another article wanted to follow up on you as she got this appointment, right? Now, you laid out the power of the HUD position in relationship to housing, and housing is, that's one thing that Clinton sold the black community as far as, and how that bubble was, and the devastation of that bubble around housing, right? Because it was like, we can give you these here, which the market made the money, right? The brokers and the ones who was creating these here, instruments that was letting people to be able to buy these houses when they had no credit or income to be able to support them. And then when the bubble bust, it was black folks who were severely hurt by the devastation of the housing market. And I think you laid out that in this HUD position, she's in a position, she would be in a position to help in creating wealth in black communities by virtue of that, because of, or even creating economic engines within black communities, right? But here on this Hill article, it says, Fudge, I can do so much of the same thing at HUD as agriculture, meaning that she wanted the agricultural department, right? But the thing is, now you laid out the power of that position, and then what she says, well, everybody knows how passionate I am about feeding hungry children and school lunches and the kinds of things we do with food and nutrition. It is my passion, and I can do so much of the same thing with HUD. So instead of having a strategy of how to create Black families, which will increase the wealth composition within in this moment, what she wants to do in that position, I mean, you know, is do what the person in agriculture is supposed to do, right? Because the food stamps, the lunch programs, they're under the agricultural department. They're not under HUD.
They're not under HUD, yeah.
Right? But what she's going to use, that's what she said. I mean, she's going to use the HUD department
to feed
children.
No, well, you know what? That's what she said. But she's going to use the HUD department to help increase wealth for the same folks that Senator Israel 10 years ago, and that she's been a mouthpiece for, that Jewish papers then wrote that she is a politician for Israel. I didn't say that. They said it, according to published reports. That's what they said. I'm not saying it. So if she's a mouthpiece for Israel and acts on Israel's behalf, whose behalf is she going to be acting in as a HUD secretary that can send money towards block grants to different municipalities to develop housing? Come on, listen, if you think, what's that program that Trump said that he, Operation Warp Speed?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Well, if you think that gentrification is moving now, you wait till this, I don't know how long he's going to be in, whether it's 4 or 8 years, gentrification is going to be moving warp speed under her.
Mm.
Because mm-hmm. she's not acting in your interest. She wasn't put there to act in your interest.
And it's just interesting. I mean,
because if you remember, Richard, I played a clip from Biden's meeting with AIPAC when he promised them what he was going to do. And this was when he was first started running in his campaign, May or something. I don't know. It was early on. I played that clip. I'll eventually play it again so people can hear it. So now all of a sudden, when he picks a housing secretary, he picks her. This is not just happenstance.
And it does tie to what is being said for me, these appointments and where they're misplaced, because I'm interested, as I mentioned, off air, now that, what's her name, Susan Rice, she's head of
domestic policy.
Policy.
After she was UN secretary, Secretary of Foreign Policy, if I'm not mistaken. I might be getting them twisted. Now she's over domestic policy. Come on, our people got to be smarter. We got to be smarter than this.
Right. And it's, I mean, we may be reading into something, but it seems like and again, you know, like when you play the clip as far as with Biden, because it's something, the whole thing, because the piece that I pull out of that, and talking to those heads of the NAACP was, again, this here beating the drum, stop that, defund the police talk.
Yeah. Well, Biden not only said it, but Black People's Savior said it, Obama. He scolded him, said the same thing. And I don't know, maybe Biden got it from him, or maybe he got it from Biden. Who knows?
I think about that, but I'll leave that, you know, try to bring that in as far as what I see that's about.
Let me go to Newport News. Newport News.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. How you doing?
How are you, sir?
Hey, look, you covered so much. Let me sneak this one in first. You're talking about Marsha Fudge. You're probably not going to believe this. I can't remember the title of the article, but it came out in the mid-90s. Remember I called in telling you how AIPAC also took all of these Black HBCU students to Israel?
Oh, yeah.
That is part of the same program, but I'm going to tell you the interesting thing about it. Guess who else was involved in how AIPAC picks out these local officials? Y'all covered it, but I don't think you made the connection, but as soon as I say it, you're going to get it. Bloomberg with his 400 program. Stroking funds to what? Minority and low, what do you call it, local politicians who what? Have small-time budgets, can't afford it. He comes in, gives them grants. They look good. They move up. Same thing with Fudge. She's one of them.
Wow.
I'm laughing because you're nailing it. And then Jeff Richard says something about you might be speculating. The truth is people don't want to understand it is a concerted, orchestrated effort. This is not accidental. Not at all. And an interesting thing when you talk about her. If I can't remember all of the information, but I pulled it up because here's an interesting thing for you. A man, I call into Janice Graham's program. I don't know if you mind me talking about other platforms, but I look at them, our common ground. This Professor James Taylor pulled a logical fallacy on me, talked about how ignorant and old I was, didn't understand how sharp Clyburn was, and Clyburn was playing chess while I was taking checkers, and I was... I got a new word in my vocabulary, thanks to Janice, because I don't know if you know her, but you know, she's MIT and all of that, worked for Xerox. She's a wordsmith, so she came up and titled her program, said an interesting word, niggling. Niggling is when you supposedly do nothing but criticize, tear down and talk negative with no critique or understanding of what you're talking about. That's basically what the word means. So when this man talked about how Clyburn was so sharp and how he's in work to keep things off of black people that we don't even know about because he's so sharp, I told him, I said, hold on. I hear your narrative, young man, and I respect your title. But I've been around for 67 years, and here's what I can tell you I know about Clyburn. He won in a protected district created in 1993 off the sweat and brow and the dogged tenacity of black people. He got in because it was a protected thing, and his family had a little clout. Then for 93, the only thing he can say for black people is he got a medical development down in the Charleston, the capital city, named after him, Clyburn, whatever, technical center or whatever. But for 10 years, he didn't do nothing, him nor that other, it's a family program. Yeah, the other dude, Bakara Sellers, who's the, next generation of a civil rights worker, people that was in the movement. Now, you're the next generation of them. You didn't do nothing for 10 years when the people in Denmark, South Carolina were being fed water that was being sanitized by a pool sanitizing agent. Now, I've been on this for over 4.5, 5 years. Now, that man, I told that man, I said, now, that's what you say about Clyburn. That's what I know about him from the state level when he was in South Carolina politics. Then he got lucky and moved into the national scene. And the only thing he could find to do was to deliver the man for mass incarceration and Lord knows other stuff, because I've been following the crime bill since 79 or 80. That's how far Joe actually goes back, not to just 94. He goes back to 79 and 80 when they had three strikes and the three strikes with the other thing. I can't think of the name of the national program where you had mandatory 5 years for a weapon. Mm-hmm. I got into it with Janice on a program before that, telling her when she said people blame it on Joe. And I told her, hold on. That was the first federal bill written with standards so high for the police departments till the only way they could get, watch this, the thing you're talking about, block grants, was to elevate an incarcerated higher levels and give longer sentences. It was written into the law. So basically, the federal government can't make a state do it, but they wrote the criteria so high they had no choice to do it if they wanted to take the money. You get where I'm coming from?
So
you know how the game is played, but let's get back to the part that this man said. So I told him, I said, so now you claim to be a political thinker, and you just spent 35 minutes explaining to me how a man that's the number three in the damn Democratic Party, the majority in the lower chamber, delivered his people to a man and ain't had no precondition, hadn't bargained for nothing, and you telling me he's supposed to be a political genius? There ain't a fool out here nowhere that negotiates and give up their bounty before they write down what the hell they're trading for.
Now, wait a minute, Otis. Clyburn got his daughter on the, what it was that the,
she was a pawn. She was a pawn to do away with net neutrality. That's the whole
thing. There you go. I just wanted to say, I mean, you know, he took care of family.
Let me throw the other one in that I told y'all about when I told you where Trump messed up, didn't understand government. He got mad at Cummings for what was going on in Baltimore, but y'all have already gone over it, and Elliot actually read it, and I told you about it twice. The problem with the block grants once they were developed in 74, they were supposed to be looking like something good, but they already told you what ended up happening, and I did too when I told you what Obama did with that daggone Julio Castro or whatever his name was that was in charge of HUD.
Mm-hmm.
When the people in Houston and Dallas won a federal lawsuit against getting shoddy work in their places, the two biggest lawsuits in Texas, the biggest state, they won in federal court. Guess what the federal judge said? Even though you won, because of the way block grants are done and the federal government has no enforcement power, watch this, can dictate where the funds go, but then can't dictate how the people are held accountable for how they spend the funds, because you already said it. With block grants, the local people do it, and they give you fancy language with what? Oversight and close work relationship. So you in there doing just what Elliot said, pushing gentrification as though you're improving the county, then you got no control over the quality of work. So what do? You give the white folks 10 and 20 year leases to take vouchers and do public housing. Then you flip it back over to private and do just what they're doing now, turn it into condos and stuff. And I laugh because y'all say, well, the people aren't going to be there short term. Guess where I first saw this? A place called a five-way stop in Dallas, Texas in the early 80s. Did the very same thing. Gave people 10 and 12-year tax abatements. Let that place run. It was a top-of-the-line place to be for 10 years. As a matter of fact, it made Time Magazine for the highest concentration of young people. And I was working as a bartender then, making cash money, $3,000-$4,000 a week in tips.
You were shaking that.
You were shaking. Tell me nothing, but let me tell you. When I went back there 12 years later, guess what it was? Low income vouchers and what? Looking for how we're going to energize and make an opportunity zone to revitalize. These people know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And when they upgrade where you are in Philly, they go to the next crop. That's what it is. Quote, starter homes. Once them people, Elliot already said it, once you start getting children and this and that, you do what? Move out to more secure places with better schools, but those schools are not going to be public schools. They're going to be big-time private and church-run schools. Come on, man. Run it down. I ain't even going to go over the other stuff we're going to talk about now, because Fudge got some shouty background with some real estate and stuff, too, locally, before the Israelis AIPAC bail her out. But they groomed these people.
Yeah.
The same thing Bloomberg, I'm going to tell you, when you do that Bloomberg 400, they're the same people that showed up were trying to make him be somebody. They done paid their way and got these people on standby, letting them know when they got to walk across the stage. Better not say a damn thing, but they can truck across the stage with a cold cue. Be strong, my brother. Wow.
Thanks for your contribution. Oh, man.
He was a mixer.
He was raking it in. $4 a week.
He was having them going out there like, yeah, I'm big time.
Let's go. Let's take 404 before we take a break. Go to 404. 404.
Hey, how you hear me, man? Y'all hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yep. Last Saturday night, man, it was off the chain, man. So, okay, first of man, Otis got in the ring with Mr. Taylor. Then next, your boy Jay got in the ring, man. And Janice, it was like Battle Royal, man. Some W mixed master art and shit, man. But anyway, look at him, man. Y'all know me. I'm a thinker, man, right? So look at him. By my observation, everybody on the planet is mental ill crazy, man. Black people and white people, okay? Let me break it on down now. You know, black people from the hell we've been through, we got people in mental illness, okay? That's a guarantee. But being them oppressors that doing this, they got mental illness. But they thinking, they supposed to do this. They're thinking it's a privilege. They got the white privilege crap. So by my observation, everybody's mental ill, crazy as hell on this planet right now, man. Especially in America. All right? Mm-hmm. So come up with that observation, especially with my black people. Ain't no sense to argue with no other black people because all of us crazy as hell trying to figure this kid out and this baby. So to my man, every black person don't need to be arguing with us, man. We trying to figure this out in the making. And then the white folks trying to figure out how to keep us in the box. So they crazy. So now that I see that, bro, I can't mix it up, especially with no black people, man, because all of us trying to figure it out. No matter what, the politician, athlete, you, me, Lottie, Donnie, everybody, all of us trying to figure this out, man. Okay.
Well, now, what are they trying to figure out?
How to get out this matrix we're in, man.
You think the majority of black misleadership class or elected officials is trying to figure out how to get out of a matrix? I don't think so.
Well, either that they're trying to figure out how to stay in to keep easy.
Oh, okay. So that's different.
I can live with that. I can live with it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's different.
Everybody trying to figure out how to survive in this crap, like Miss Francis said. Some people like us trying to figure out how to get out and liberate our people, and some people trying to just be to get a biscuit, chicken and biscuit.
Okay, so that's different. Well, you said we all trying to figure it out. I had to disagree with you, but now you changed it.
Put it this way. All of us trying to make it. Okay, put it like that. All of us fucking crazy, Elliot. Excuse me, you, them too.
Wait a minute. I like my chicken and biscuits. I ain't crazy because I like
my chicken. All right. Well, y'all know what I'm saying, man. I'm using
I understand.
What you call analogy. But look at here. Now, get back to a couple of shows y'all had about 3 weeks ago when you had my man, the Communist Party, Socialist Party, right? Remember that show?
Yes.
The dude that say Yehudi. So,
yeah.
He got white folks. When he said he got white folks working for him, right? That's what set my man Jay off. I could see what my man was saying. So now, I'm at this point now with white people, man. Only thing, I'm like a man, Malcolm, where the liberals ain't no good. They always want to run something and tell us what to do. Conservatives, you know what they do. So now, and then I'm like Farrakhan, man. They can't do nothing. Only white person can do for me now is be John Brown. I know Ellie ain't going to say, you don't expect him to do that. I know. But when I say being John Brown, okay, like we always checking each other, right? That's all we check each other when we see. One of us doing wrong. We check each other. So, by my observation, it's time for these white folk to start checking each other when they say, if we ain't no way around, they say racist stuff about black people, blah, blah, blah. I know you don't expect me to do it. I know you, Danny. But if they ain't doing that, John Brown, they can't do nothing for me, like Brown's gonna say. They can't do nothing for me. So, I'm like my man Jay, man. So, what y'all think about that, Richard?
Well, if you want to be like Jay, you could be like Jay. What is it? You said what? You asked what we think about it. You said you want to be like Jay. Did you just said that right?
I make an analogy, man.
Okay.
I know you want to be like. You sound like Dave Chappelle.
Right? Wait a minute. Whatever. No.
No.
We got to laugh to keep from crying. You know that, Wes, right?
Because laugh to keep from crying, a laugh to keep from snapping. You know, I know the thing.
Because
I'm not letting nobody push my button like oldest them and really get all amped up when I argue with another brother over some boom crap. I can't do it. So I got to save my, he's 60, 67. I'm 63. I'm trying to bust 100. But what I'm saying is, make a long story short.
They was arguing with James Lance. You know, James been on this program a couple times. He must have been sleepy or something when he was arguing about climbing.
Hey, bro, it was beautiful, man. That was grand. they were better than Tyson and Roy Jones, man. You know, they were.
Well, that wasn't much of a fight,
man. Hey, bro,
Yeah, that wasn't much of a fight, man.
I tell him the truth. Would, James talks so bad about me. Can I just sneak this one in, brother, from Atlanta? Let me, Mr. Elliott. Because he's been on the program, and I told him in advance, even though I did get his name wrong because I was in here sipping on some nearest.
Oh, I knew something was going on.
I started sipping on some nearest after I talked to him, after I listened to him. Now, this is what got me. When he explained how sharp Clyburn was and all the things that Clyburn has done behind the scenes for us. See, he didn't just say something positive about Clyburn. So when I asked him who negotiates, who delivers without negotiation, he never answered that. He turned on me and called me an old fool. All kinds of stuff. I was talking. I know you sharp. I'm thinking to myself because I was sitting here with a fellow, a friend of mine, and I'm laughing. I told him, I said, now hold on. He done gone do this alone on me, talking about what he think he know about me and all that. And all I said was the evidence in the public domain say that your narrative sound good, but here's the facts. So then he told me you mixing state politics with national. I said, hold on. I told you the man won and how he neglected stuff when he was just on the state level. Then I explained to you he did the same thing when he got to the national because he didn't do nothing to secure nothing for us that made sense when he had the most leverage. I said, that was my only claim. Oh, you're just ignorant. You know, oh, man, he just. I told him, you think I'm lying, go back and listen to brother tell you. You know what I did? I wrote down what I had to say in the chat, just like I do in yours, but I called back and I told him, I have to sincerely apologize to you because I did say to you that he's the number three man in Congress. So that's national. And you're telling me that I'm mixing the state because Joe Biden ran in the South Carolina state primary. I said, but that was for the national, the Democrats. So I'm not sure who confused him, but I just apologize to you because me and you ain't going to never agree on that. I'm done. He literally told me that man Clyburn is still on the state level and I'm confusing things. And I'm, look, I know he's been on your program, but I think he beat me to the nearest. That's what I want to say. I know when to sip. Yeah. I don't guzzle.
See what you done did, Wes? Yeah, you up here refereeing.
But some of these people like Taylor, he get amped up, man. He get amped up and it's funny, man. See, some of these people with these degrees, man, they stuck on the system. All they know is how, but they know the degree, man. So they ain't like me. I got a degree from Sidewalk University. So I ain't with all that academic and all
that. I literally got at least 50 tweets to Clyburn over everything from H.R. 40 right on through to an interview he did in Make It Plain with Mark Thompson. For Professor Taylor to tell me what he thought he knew about me, I found it amusing as hell. I did. I mean, I couldn't even be offended because it's classic 15 logical fallacies. It was never about me. I don't know him. As a matter of fact, I've studied him more than he studied me because I've been only listening in these master classes. So when he diverted to talking about me, I'm saying, no, bro, you got to defend your depiction of Clyburn. I'm not even going to get in the mud like that because I know you're a young brother, father, and whatever. I don't do that kind of mudslinging. I don't do it. But he was wrong.
That's how you do it, man.
And I tell people, go listen to it all the time because I grew up in the country. And one thing my father with a fourth grade education taught me early on, you can learn from a fool and nothing else, you learn what not to do. No need of me arguing with that man. He started calling me outside.
That's right.
What he thought of me. That was just too low to go. That was wrong on his part. And the bad part about it is, he addressed that it was coming by saying, I don't mean no harm. But come on, young brother. Who you talking to?
One thing. Whoever you get mad, whoever I get mad at, they don't feel nothing.
One thing we need to get out of what I'm hearing, you know, because is important in relationship to, because all of that doesn't change the objective condition.
There
of
you go.
And right. we, but what we learn is how we have to deal with the information
with each other,
even with our differences. Yep. And sometimes
there's never a reason for a personal attack with me. I don't assault with attention, because I'm gonna tell you something. I know this. I'm 67 years old. I told that I got a son that's 40 years younger than me. One of the first things I always told him is admit when you're wrong or misunderstood something. If not, you'll never learn. You'll be a fool all your life.
Well, my brother, only person you can control is you. But I won't say this. I'm gonna say this, and I'm gonna drop the mic. I want to holler at my man Tim. Tim, if you still there, hey Tim, there, man. I just want to say yo to you. And I'm from 1911, and I'm gonna have to come up there and go to Broad Street, Tim. You know what I'm talking about, Tim. You still on the line, Tim?
My brother Tim, he can hear you.
Go ahead and drop the mic, and we'll get back to the regular schedule program. All right.
Well, all right.
Get back to the regular schedule program.
Talk to you.
I know y'all.
All right. Thank you.
We're gonna take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. And when we come back from break, I'm gonna play that clip when Biden talked to your representatives, Richard.
Yes.
We're going to take a brief break. Again, you can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. Abibitumi, Black Power, Abibitumi. The only word you need to know to join your global Kometu Black family, to join your interconnected Kometu Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
Thank you. know that this problem needs to be solved, and we can't keep relegating it to generation after generation because a few of us got a little money, a few of us got positions, a few of us have wealth, while the masses of our people are going steadily down. No one man can rise above the condition of his people. See, brother said responsibility. Is it that we should let them take responsibility to do for us, or should we pool the knowledge that's at the table, the power that's in our community, the wealth that's in our community to change the harsh reality of black life in America? We have to do the job of fulfilling the black agenda. Thank you.
We have a message to the black man, because the black man today is a man who has been made now almost into a laughing stock. Nobody takes the black man serious. We are just used to be somebody's tool. We are the sportsmen. We're the singers and the dancers. And we're also labeled as the pimps and the criminals and the drug dealers and the killers and the vagabonds of society. We're the bogeymen of British society and other Western systems. And we want to dispel that lie and destroy those myths and put the black man back on the map where we belong. Who is the black man? The black man is the original man. If it wasn't for the black man, no other men could be on this planet. We are the fathers of humanity. We gave birth to all of you.
We are the watchmen on the wall. You are too. You watch with a political eye. We watch from a spiritual eye. But we're supposed to be the watchmen for the people that vote for us. The sad thing is the people vote, but they don't give you the money to run your campaigns. So here come big business.
How are you? How are you, Judge? How are you, Alderman? How are you, Congressman? How are you? How are you, Reverend? Well, what can I do for you today, Reverend?
You can't do nothing for me. See, that's what we got to be careful of. We got to be careful of who we bow down to. But see, when you get in your congregation and you talk this Jesus, this powerful Jesus that's sitting at the right hand of the Father with all power in his hand, then you go with your hat in your hand to the governor, to the mayor, to the president, begging for some crumbs. You have sold your God cheap. And you make the white man downtown disrespect all of us. Yeah.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 9:27 in the city of Philadelphia, And we're in Freestyle Friday mode here. Time for Awakening. Anything that you on your mind, you can give us a call. We'll talk about it. 215-490-9832. It's 215-490-9832. We were just kicking around a couple things, talking about keeping a scorecard for some of these folks getting these positions, who developed them, where they're coming from. We kind of went back to some old information that we had pulled up on Marsha Fudge on a program that we did a shoot. It might have been a year and a half, a couple of years ago, and talked about where she was cultivated from, who helped her into that position, and now she's in the position of being the HUD secretary. So if you think gentrification was moving fast, believe me, it'll be an Operation Warp Speed during this administration coming in now, whether it lasts 4 or 8 years. We're going to see what's really going to happen. Keep a scorecard on these folks, people. And you'll see that these people are not operating in your interests. Don't get fooled and telling your children, oh, look at that black face, and they'll be so proud. No. We got to do the homework on these folks, and we'll see that these folks are not operating in our best interest. Richard, before I play this clip, it just reminds me of two things. That clip that I just played, and Minister Farrakhan was talking about, giving an analogy of the elected officials and how, you know, they kowtow to what he considered big business. And it also reminds me of that clip that when Cynthia McKinney was on our program and gave that analogy of Toby being beaten, Kuta Kinte being beaten, forced to admit to say his name was Toby. And she talked about you had Chicken George, and then you had other blacks trying to intervene with the boss. You remember when she gave that little analogy?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, this kind of reminds me of that. Listen to the tone of the conversation that he has with so-called civil rights leaders and some of your black, and I'll use a term from Black Agenda Report, the black misleadership class. Listen to this conversation Biden has with them. This is from Tuesday. This was a leaked report from the publication, The Intercept. And just check it out. If I can get this thing queued up here. This is it.
We ready to go?
Hello.
On Tuesday, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris held a private Zoom call with a small group of civil rights leaders from across the country.
This is a completely closed call, so just wanted to remind you of that. There's no recording.
Clearly, somebody did record, and now I have a copy of it, and now you're listening to it. Present for the Zoom was Derek Johnson, president of the NAACP, Vanita Gupta, a former ACLU attorney who was Obama's Civil Rights Division head, the Reverend Al Sharpton, Sherrilyn Ifill, Melanie Campbell, who is the president of the National Coalition on Black Civic Participation, and soon-to-be former Congressman Cedric Richmond, who Biden has named an assistant to the president. In many ways, it was a Zoom call like any other.
Can't hear you, Cedric. You're on mute.
It also included a few Biden-esque boasts.
I'm the first person, black or white, who called attention to the fact that you were finding that there was the rate of people who were African-Americans are dying was three times that of white people. I don't carry around a stamp on my head saying progressive and I'm AOC, but I have a more of a record of getting things done in the United States Congress than anybody you know. Anybody you know.
Some Biden cringe.
By 2040, this country is going to be minority white European. Hear me? Minority white European. And you guys are going to have to start working more with Hispanics, who make up a larger portion of the population than y'all do.
And some Biden temper.
Let's get something straight. You shouldn't be disappointed. What I've done so far is more than anybody else has done this far. Okay? Number one. Number two. I mean what I say when I say it.
But it was also a...
Now, hold it, Richard. I'm going to continue to play it. But you see how that... You see the tone of this... You know, these people, these black elected officials want to act like they're in charge. But when they're in front of these white folks, you see how they talk to them. You know, Minister of Crime was writing that clip I played. Make the white man downtown disrespect all of us by the way he talks to them. Yeah, I didn't did it. You hear that tone?
You dealing with them Hispanics.
You hear that tone? I'm telling you. I'm telling you. And you hear all the ones that was there. Sharpton, Richmond, the head of the NAACP, and there was others there. They don't mention them all. They sitting there like their father, like you would sit at your house and your father scolding you when you did something that you wasn't supposed to do. Now, let me just play that again for some listener audience. I'm going to reel that back a little bit before I let it continue.
It was a Zoom call like any other.
Can't hear you, Cedric. You're on mute.
It also included a few Biden-esque boasts.
I'm the first person, black or white, who called attention to the fact that you were finding that there was the rate of people who were African Americans are dying was three times that of white people.
We needed him to tell us that. You're a senile old fool. Go ahead. I'm gonna play. Keep on going.
I don't carry around a stamp on my head saying progressive and I'm AOC, but I have a more of a record of getting things done in the United States Congress than anybody you know. Anybody you know.
Yeah.
Some Biden cringe.
By 2040. This country is going to be minority white European. Hear me? Minority white European. And you guys are going to have to start working more with Hispanics, who make up a larger portion of the population than y'all do.
And some Biden temper.
Let's get something straight. You shouldn't be disappointed. What I've done so far is more than anybody else has done this.
Now, wait a minute, Richard. That's why they met with him, because they were disappointed in his appointment so far. So that's how he started out. Let's get something straight here. I didn't more for you. You know what he wanted to say they were than any of it. So just shut up. That's what he wanted to say. I'm just paraphrasing. Hey, boy, let me finish it. I'll keep on cutting and interrupting this thing. Hold on.
This far. Okay. Number one. Number two. I mean what I say when I say it.
There's also a space for an airing of, if not grievances, at least slight disappointments, and a forum for civil rights leaders to lobby Biden on everything from personnel to executive action to legislation. Many of those in the meeting urged Biden to be aggressive in his use of executive power.
I want to ask that you consider issuing an executive order to create a national task force to examine challenges to our democracy, a national voter access commission.
It's going to be important, for example, that one of your first actions is a reversal of the executive order that President Trump promulgated that essentially seeks to gag conversations about diversity, race, and history among anyone who contracts with the federal government. And so we would ask you to lend your voice and your strength and your influence and your power and your ability to reach across the aisle to try and pass the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. But failing that, we would ask you to pull from that act measures that can be enacted by executive order. You have the power to call for a national database on police misconduct. You have the power to ask for a registry that will allow people to easily search in public multiple misconduct complaints against particular officers. You have the ability to impose a database around police killings and police shootings. And these are things that you can do by executive order. There is a prison tragedy that is unfolding because of COVID. I encourage you to use your power to order an investigation of state and local prisons and jails to find out precisely what is happening. And you have that power through the Department of Justice.
And here's Al Sharpton.
We don't care about throwing fists in the air and the symbols. We want the substance. The Joe Biden I've known is substance. The Kamala Harris I've known is substance. We need it now more than ever. And I would hope that the first day you start doing the things with your executive orders to restore some dignity to law enforcement in our community and to voting.
Biden, in fact, has an enormous...
Now, wait a minute, Richard. You hear Sharpton.
Yeah,
we don't want to see no fists in the air. Basically, that ain't nothing. But we want substance. Joe Biden is substance. Kamala Harris is substance. That other stuff ain't nothing. See, that's what your leaders talk say about you behind closed doors. These are the type of conversations that they're supposed to be coming back, letting the community know how these people talk about them, how they feel about them. These people that claim they're your representatives, that was encouraging you to go out here and vote like your life depends on it. These are the people that sit behind doors and get scolded by these white people like they're somebody's children. They don't come back and tell you that, but they'll come back and tell you all kind of bull crap about getting out here, vote like you get Trump out of there, vote like your life depends on it, you a traitor if you don't, and all kind of old foolish slogans. But they get talked to behind closed doors like they're somebody's child. I'm going to finish it up.
Enormous amount of power as president. Two episodes ago, we devoted an entire show to just that. Turns out that Biden does not appear to be a deconstructed subscriber. Here's how he responded to those calls.
There's some things that I'm going to be able to do by executive order. I'm not going to hesitate to do it. But what I'm not going to do is I'm not going to do what used to, Benita, you probably used to get angry with me during the debates when you'd have some of the people you were supporting that on day one, I'm going to executive order to do this. Not within the constitutional authority. I am not going to violate the Constitution.
No, wait a minute, Rich. You hear that? Now, some of these blacks was asking for this, asking them to do that. You heard his answer. And we know that that Constitution document didn't contain anything favorable to black people. So when he said he's not going to violate the Constitution, it don't take a rocket scientist to understand what he means. Or it shouldn't.
And it's the two issues, in, you know, we got to be clear. What are the two issues? Because what's his name? I can't.
What are you talking about, Sharpton?
Sharpton, you know, Sharpton kind of tried to just, well, no, not the Biden I know. But the sister said, you know, the two critical issues, and I appreciate it. I thought they were clear, to do something about these beliefs, you know, in relationship with what they're doing, and to do something about the voting repression, which is obvious within black districts and the way redistricting has been going, that these at the state level, the state and local level, and primarily at these state levels, and definitely at the southern state level, they have been suppressing the black vote.
Well, he'd answered you, Richard. Well, he ain't answered you. He answered her. I'm not going to violate the Constitution. Right. There's certain things I can do, but I'm not going to violate the Constitution. Okay.
Which raises the question, why?
Yeah. Or it don't raise the question, why for me? Let me, I'm going to keep on playing this so we can go back to the phones.
There is a Constitution. It's our only hope. Our only hope. And the way to deal with it is where I have executive authority, I will use it to undo every single damn thing this guy has done by executive authority. But I'm not going to exercise executive authority where it's questioned, where I can come along and say, I can do away with assault weapons. There's no executive authority to do away with that. And no one's fought harder to get rid of assault weapons than me. Me. But you can't do it by executive order. If you do that, next guy comes along and says, well, guess what? By executive order, I'm going to say everybody can own machine guns again. So we got to be careful. I know you all know this. I know you know it. And poor Kamala's heard me say this, and so has Cedric. I used to have a friend named Bob Gold, who was a really bright guy. Not much of it. We went to school together. He wasn't an academic whiz.
The Bob Gold story sadly doesn't go anywhere. The upshot of the anecdote is that he taught Biden the word overstand, which is a kind of black power term from back.
Now, wait a minute, Richie. Hold it. When he start telling him about this Bob Gold, he said, yeah, he wasn't much of a student. He wasn't much of an academic.
Right.
But you can see from what he's saying and what he says when I start this tape back up, that this Bob Gold must have been black.
Yeah. Well, the guy said, you know, for, black, you know, from the black power. Yeah.
What? Check it. Check.
At first, I wouldn't have picked it up. But when the
comment. Yeah, but he wasn't much of a student. He wasn't much of an academic. He got the nerve talking about somebody wasn't smart. This man, according to they were running and Trump put out them campaign ads, graduated at the bottom of his class. He got a nerve talking about somebody who wasn't smart.
And the thing was, you know, I
I have a black friend. Ain't that the white trope? No.
Well, well, wait a minute. Listen to friend. Listen to some more of his, cliches. Oh, look, I'm going to play it just three more minutes.
In the day that was used as a stand-in for understand, but adding in an element of higher-level awareness.
He looked at me and said, Joe, I not only understand you, I overstand you. I'm sure you overstand me here.
Shirley Sherrod is a civil rights legend, a hero. I live in the state of Mississippi. I'm surrounded by civil rights icon, and I understand the reverence that many of them have, particularly in rural areas. So I want to make sure that as you consider appointments, that you do so with November 5th in mind, so that we don't miss an opportunity to be able to get confirmed some of the outstanding candidates that you're going to bring forward. If you decide to take that route, I strongly encourage you to reach out to Ms. Sherrod, have a conversation with her. I strongly encourage you to talk to black farmers so that you have a clear understanding of the impact any decision could have on the January 5th election. It is our goal as NAACP, it is our goal as civil rights community for this administration to be successful. And it can only be the success we need it to be if we have the ability to get good people confirmed.
Biden, however, used the...
Now, Richard, this guy mentioned about his... because that was before this guy, Vilsack, was announced as the agriculture mm-hmm. secretary.
Right.
And this guy was encouraging him not to nominate Vilsack or appoint Vilsack because of his relationship with black farmers and what he did to Shirley Sherrod. Mm. And he was saying, well, you know, reconsider this before because it might affect what happens in Georgia. Now, listen to his answer to what this guy, I don't know who it was, civil rights activist that proposed it.
NAACP.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, that's who it was. Let me play his answer.
The warning on Sherrod is a jumping off point for a counter warning. Don't push too hard on police reform, he told the group. At least not now.
One of the things I'd be concerned about, just as was pointed out to me that you wanted me to be concerned, Derek, I think it was you said it, about, you know, dealing with Vilsack as in terms of agriculture. Well, first of all, you can learn more about Vilsack's record, but my point is this.
No, wait a minute, Richard. Hold it. Hold it. Now, look at the insult. See, they sit there. If you're talking to them, wait a minute, don't talk to me like that, they'd have something to fire back. He going to tell him, well, you know, you got to do a little more studying on who the Vilsack's record. Well, what? Okay. But wait, he going to totally dismiss his concern and check out what he says to it. I'll replay that part that I just stopped.
It was pointed out to me that you wanted me to be concerned, Derek, I think it was you said it, about, you know, dealing with Vilsack as in terms of agriculture. Well, first of all,
I think you're forgetting his place.
About Vilsack's record, but my point is this. I don't think we should make that a big issue going into before January 5th. When the election takes place down in Georgia.
He don't know where it is.
I also don't think we should get too far ahead of ourselves on dealing with police reform in that, because they've already labeled us as being defund the police. Anything we put forward in terms of the organizational structure to change policing, which I promise you will occur, promise you. Because that's how they beat the living hell out of us across the country, saying that we're talking about defunding the police. We're not. We're talking about holding them accountable. I just raise it with you to think about. And as Reverend Al said, I was a pain in the ass to everybody except him when we did the commission before. I didn't think we went far enough. As I learned early on, it's all right to question your opponents, and you're not my opponents, any of you. It's always appropriate to question your opponent's judgment. It's never appropriate to question their motive, even if you know it. So we can be tough, question judgment, not motive, to get things done. Anyway, I'm going to yield to my vice president.
Yeah, that was all of it.
Yes, that's all.
Wow.
That's all y'all need to hear.
Wow. This is, boy, I'm telling you. Let's go to the phones here. 215. 215.
Hey, brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
How y'all doing?
Good.
Praise be to Allah. You know, Elliot and Richard, I don't even know where to begin, man. I mean, it's like I'm listening to this thing. Let me ask you this, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, my dear brothers. When was this fiasco of a meeting with Joe Biden, with Sharpton and the gang? When was this meeting held?
Tuesday.
It was held recently.
Tuesday.
This past Tuesday.
Tuesday. Yeah, this week, Tuesday.
Now I noticed, you know, I listened to a terrestrial radio station here, for the WRD, the black, so-called black station. I noticed. Now, none of the hosts, especially the ones that always tell us to go vote, why none of them play that on their radio, Elliot?
Yeah, they don't. That's part of the problem, Joe. That's part of the problem. That's part of the problem.
I mean, none of them played it. They I don't want to name the individual because you know what I'm talking about. I want to give them that kind of publicity because they don't deserve it because they sell our people out. But it's just amazing these two, they come on in the morning, every morning, that's always beating up on black people to vote. And if you don't vote, this and that, you know, you're a traitor. But yet, none of them played that condescending speech by Joe Biden to these Negroes. And like you said, Sharpton was there, Cedric Richmond, all the rest of them Negroes. And this man just talked to them. I mean, you know. Again, I don't even know where to begin. You know, people can call up all they want and try to throw Minister Farrakhan under the bus, but Minister Farrakhan is a man. He's not a perfect man, but he's a man that got respect for himself and his people. He would never let somebody like a Joe Biden dress him down without coming back at him. And you ain't got to come back at him and call him a name. You can just come say, look, man, you know, hey, I don't like your tone. Come back at him straight up like a man and put things in perspective. These Negroes, spineless Negroes, sit there and let this white man just talk down to them like that. But like Minister Farrakhan said in the clip you play, but they have no problem with Reverend Sharpton and all the rest of them Negroes. They say they black Christians. They love to get up there talking about how powerful Jesus is, how much they love their Jesus and stuff like that. But they sit up there and sell their, like ministers say, sell their God for cheap, man. It was insulting, man. If I was just a lay person, just listen to this right here, just didn't know the whole thing, which I do know how it goes, but just listen to this as a lay person, I would have said, what the hell? Just like a teacher, like you said, like a father chastising his children. You know, I mean, if you look at it honestly and objectively, man, this is insulting, man, and stuff for this man to just talk to them like that. And sadly, Ellen Richard, you see clearly, nothing's going to change. I was reading the current issue, the final call that the brother Amin Muhammad dropped off to me today, and the last current issues. They was talking about the situation, the escalating tension between Iran, Israel, and the United States. And once again, Joe Biden showing again. He's no different from his predecessor when it comes to power. He's talking about he might restore the nuclear deal that Obama made, but at the same time, while he's saying it, he said the key to Israel's security and sovereignty is of utmost importance. This is a quote from Joe Biden. I'm saying to myself, their security, what about the security of the Palestinian people and all the other people that in Israel terrorize on a daily basis? What the black Ethiopian Jews, the true inhabitants of that land and stuff like that, the real so-called Hebrew Israelites, where's their security? Hell with them white devils that call themselves the chosen people of God or Jews when they're nothing but converts to Judaism. There ain't no true Israelite. He's talking about security to freedom. Look, just let me know. He's no different than his predecessor. Only thing with Biden is going to be different than his predecessor. He won't be indulged in the juvenile name calling, the tweets, the silliness, and the tomfoolery that Trump engaged in. But his policy is pretty much going to remain the same. I'm going to wait and see how he deal with Cuba. Because again, you got people like Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio and the other senator from Florida, Scott, they want to punish anybody in the United States. They try to put a bill out there and punish anybody that deal with Cuban doctors. Now, hey, Cuba, which is a fraction. Understand this, Brother Ellen Richard. It's a fraction. It's not even a fraction of the United States. It's got, I mean, the United States had them on the embargo. Now, Obama did somewhat to lift the embargo, but Trump, when he got back in there, he pretty much reinstated all the sanctions and stuff to pretty much crush that the island nation. But in spite of all that, in spite of all this stuff the United States doing Cuba, has had only 131 deaths due to COVID-19, whereas America, with all this industrial nation and stuff, the Epic Center and everything, they got almost 300,000 people dead for coronavirus, if you believe the reports, right? But yet Cuba, this island that you squeeze them and suck them, trying to destroy you because they won't bow down to your will, they only got 100-something deaths. You know what I mean? That shows you right there who is doing the right thing and who is practicing acts of wickedness and everything. So that should let the people know right there, you know, what country you live in and who is doing the right thing as far as dealing with medical and the people, as opposed to the United States, the so-called land of plenty, when people that's dying left and right of this so-called coronavirus. And again, I want to see what Joe Biden do when it comes to Cuba. I don't expect much. Like, I don't expect much for him when it comes to Israel, holding Israel accountable. I don't expect much out of him because, like I said, I had a Palestinian imam, a Palestinian brother who was an imam, told me years ago. He said, "Brother Joe, in a Palestinian's culture, they refer to Joe Biden. It's a cliche they use. He never met a Zionist he didn't like." And this is what it was told to me years ago. And as you well know, Elliot, as I mentioned to you, from what this brother told me, and the media didn't make a big deal about it. They said Joe Biden and Benjamin Netanyahu have a relationship going back to when his days in the United States Senate. They have like a 35, almost 40-year friendship. So, I mean, so, hey, you know, take that for what it is, okay?
Yeah.
So,
I know, brother, when you bring forth, you know, the conversation that it keeps coming back to me because, Elliot, you know, when you play these clips that shows the posture of the leader, the black misleadership class, or those who feel that they can talk to someone, you know, talk to the president, right? And then we get the feedback of them. Even when we place it in the foreign policy context, when we're constantly raising the question about the power of this made-up territorial nation state called Israel, it makes me reflect, well, are we a reflection? And I mean, we as Black people, are we a reflection of the Sharptons, of the NAACP leaders, of the people at these who don't bring up, you know, this information using Black terrestrial stations? Are we as Black people a reflection of them? Because it seems that they seem to always be in those positions. Joe, you bring up about Minister Farrakhan. Well, why aren't we more a reflection of the posture and the position? I mean, just the character to where even the Black elected officials know they can't come with that stuff. I mean, are we missing something in this? Because I think that we spend a lot in looking at what they're doing, but are we, as Sister McKinney said, are we standing on the sideline while they're doing it? Because it's obvious it ain't getting...
Yes, we are, Richard. I'm going to answer that. Yes, we are. And I'm going to tell you why we are, Richard. Because, see, something about people, Richard, we deal from a position of ignorance and stuff. And it goes from ignorance to stupidity, because some of our people, unfortunately, and I use the word very carefully, even when you get some of our people the right information, they still want to act stupidly because they get caught up in the cult of personality, especially when it comes to Barack Obama. People can call up and try to talk about Minister Farrakhan, but Minister Farrakhan, he'd be viciously attacked by some of our own people. But when it comes to this certain elected official, the former president, and I know what I'm talking about because I told Elliot this morning, Brother Richard, even to this day, I can be in a supermarket, Brother Richard, or I could be in a store anywhere, any particular area, and I could talk to a sister or brother and Obama come up. And I might say something critical about Obama, some of his policies that I didn't like, what he did, whether it was Gaddafi or whatever. And a sister walked past me. It could be an older Black woman, younger, whatever, mainly middle-aged to older. There, I got some of the nastiest looks, and even someone made comments under their breath because they so emotionally attached to this guy, like he's some kind of guy. You don't supposed to criticize him, you know, because matter of fact, they even have heard comments even on the radio, he's our first black president. You can't say that about him. I mean, all this kind of foolishness, why this man is, has did policies that's been detrimental to black people, according to Dr. Santi, Brother Richard, who I have a lot of respect for. May not always agree with Dr. Santi, but I have a lot of respect for him for his knowledge. He's a man that supports Obama. He said on terrestrial radio show, on the free occasion, he said, brother, he was talking to the lawyer that do the show on there. He said, brother, as much as I like Obama, he said, I can't sugarcoat the truth. He said he has the worst foreign policy towards Africa and Islamic nation than any of his white predecessors. That includes Clinton, Bush, Reagan. He said his policy towards his own people that look like him is the worst. That should tell you something right there about this man. But yet you can't criticize him, like even now when his attacks, him and his wife attacks on Reverend Jeremiah Wright, who's somebody who all he ever did was try to love and look out for his family, baptize his children, help marry her, him and Michelle, all that kind, and they continue to beat the man while he's down, and yeah, because that shows a lack of character from Obama. That shows his character a false right there. That shows what kind of lower character that he is. But besides that, again, they get so wrapped up in emotional symbolism of this man that they don't want any criticism. You'll get attacked. This, even you point out stuff to this man that has been detrimental, Richard, to our people, they attack you and stuff because they so caught up in that personality and stuff like that. And he's not one of us. Like I said, when a sister attacked him, not attacked him, but criticized him, Ilhan Omar and the other sister that just won election down in Missouri, Cori Bush, about his slogan about defunding the police. They said, look, ain't no damn slogan. They said Obama should be ashamed of himself to make a issue out of a slogan. They said, ain't no damn slogans killing black people. I hear these damn racist white policemen killing our people, not no slogans. And even Michael A. Dyson said, you should be more upset with the killings of our people than what slogan somebody's saying. But she just go to show you how pro-establishment that this Negro is. He, you know, he's a rich black man. Now he got rich off of black people with them bogus books of his. And I wouldn't use his book for fish wrapping paper, to tell you the truth. You know what I mean? But my point is that people so caught up in that, and this is why our people stay politically ignorant, and this is why people like Obama on a federal level, these shit, the Negro that you heard listening to was with Biden, the ones on the state level here in Philadelphia and Pennsylvania, the ones on the local level here in Philadelphia. This is why they can right here, right now as we speak, Richard, they can run some old bogus scam right now for some tax, some kind of bond or poverty bill that's supposed to be helping black folks or people of color get out of poverty right here in Philadelphia that was passed by the city council led by a Negro and stuff like that. And our people, because they're not politically astute, they actually think this is going to help them, not realizing that when you look into the bill and you do your research, like Mensa say, use your spiritual eye and your other eye, Brother Richard, you see clearly that bill is going to be benefiting rich white developers. It's going to benefit the trade, building trades union, who has historically been racist about inclusion when it comes to black people. It's going to benefit all these people, back to poor black people in this city or the Latinos, whatever. They're not going to get hardly anything out that bill, but they think they are because they run it on a terrestrial radio station like it's legit, because they know our people are not going to do the research, most of us, and stuff. So they're going to pull another one over our people's eyes. And this is why, Richard, this is why we continue, like Sister McKinney said, be on the sidelines, because we our ignorance allow us to remain on the sidelines. This is why, like I always say, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, I can't emphasize this enough. This is why shows like y'all are so important, because you got to try to give our people the right information. Like Brother Dick Vegas always say, information is powerful, especially when you got the right information, you act on it. But so many of our people, they so ignorant that when you give them the information, and I do believe that the majority of our people will change their mindset when it comes to looking at these Negroes and the games they play on our people when they get the right information. You always have that crew that's stuck on the Obama a fantasy, like black people for years, as you know, Ellen Rich, and I close with this, last couple of comments, I'm gone. Like for years, you had black folks just like white folks. It was quote with the Kennedy mystique, you know, what they call the thing about the Kennedys. It's the name they used to use back then for the Kennedys, and black people used to just glorify about the Kennedys and stuff. It was some kind of word there. I can't even think of it right offhand. But this is the kind of, and this is the same kind of thing that black folks do with Obama. And, you know, it's this kind of mystique and stuff about him. You just can't say this about him because he was just a great guy and stuff. You know, like they used about the Kennedys and stuff. I don't know why I can't use, forget that. I can't remember that word they used about Kennedy, but that's besides the point. But my point is that as long as our people can continue to can get politically educated and on the issues that's facing our people, we'll start moving against these Negroes like Sharpton and Cedric Vixman and all the rest of them, and Marcia Fudge. You know, that's already going to be part of Joe Biden's marching orders and pulling the wool over our people's eyes. Because, again, if anything going to be done, if the Biden administration does anything beneficial for black folks, you can be sure, Ellen Richard, you can bet your bottom dollars it's gonna come from the street organizers, the progressive street organizers, whether they're in office or outside in the streets, raising hell, pushing him to do something. And when Biden do things, he's not going to be doing it because he wants to. He's going to be doing it because he has no choice but to do it. So I'm not saying some things may not get done, but it's going to be done from the grassroots level, just like it was with Lyndon Johnson. Lyndon Johnson was a cold-blooded bigot, but he was able to put through some legislation that helped out people during that time. But he didn't do it out of the goodness of his heart. He was pushed. You had people like Dr. King pushing him and others that was pushing him and stuff. He wasn't. It was known that Lyndon Johnson, there's no secret, Ellen Richard, do the research. They said Lyndon Johnson, when he was in his private time with his family and friends, he was throwing the N-word around like it was a holiday. Niggas this, niggas that. I mean, this is how he spoke and stuff. You know what I mean? So, I bet you Biden probably do the same thing in his private time. But the point is that if anything gonna be done for our people, it's gonna have to be done for them, because the people like the Sharpness of the world and all the other, all it is to go along and get along. Niggas looking for the crumbs off the white man's table, as the ministers say. So if anything gonna be done for our people, we're gonna help our people out in the street raising hell, pushing, organizing, threatening boycotts, protests, whatever, shutdowns, whatever. This is the only way things will get done through the Biden administration, because you see clearly he's going to be no different than his predecessor. You know what I mean? It's just that he just won't be calling names and stuff like this. And lastly, Ellen Richard, again, with all this going on, I don't know if you and Richard heard about the brother that got shot by killed by the police in Ohio about, I guess, 2 weeks ago. Brother, again, it happens. It's continued to happen. A black man is not even safe in his own house. A black woman, Breonna Taylor, she's not safe. She's in a bedroom with her boyfriend, and she gets her body riddled with bullets. Brother down in Dallas, Brooklyn Jean, he ain't eating ice cream. A white female cop busts into his place and guns him down since she thought it was his house. His brother in Ohio, I forgot what part of Ohio, he went to Subway and got a sandwich. He's coming back to his house. He's on his own steps, going in this house with his sandwich and his soda, I guess, and his white sheriff or whatever guns him down, saying he thought he was a fugitive. And I'm saying to myself, well, even if he was a fugitive, don't you have to say, tell him to stop first and arrest him before you just shoot him? So even if he was, but it even worse, Ellen Richard, he was the innocent. He was the wrong person. But even if he was the one, you don't just go shoot somebody. And if there is a fugitive, you give a person a chance to surrender first. Of course, that is, if you're black, you don't get that chance. He gunned this boy down. This boy collapses in the house. I think his grandmother and his brother was in the kitchen. He comes, he staggers into the kitchen, just collapsed right in front of him, and dropped his bag of food and collapsed in a pool of blood on the kitchen floor. I mean, can you imagine how traumatized that grandmother and brother is to see someone gunned down right before that? They didn't see him gunned down, but just to see him collapse in a pool of blood and all that bigot that shot him can say it was a mistake. It was, you know, an honest mistake. I mean, come on, man. Again, this is the kind of backdrop of what's happening to our people with the incoming Biden administration. And like the sister was telling Biden about the executive order holding these police accountable, and yet what do Biden say, Ellen Richard? We can't use the term defund the police by getting gunned down. I mean, man, please, don't, man. I'm getting too emotional. Let me end right here, man, because I'm just, you know, it just makes me want to puke. He can always double come with some. We can't use the term. Here, this brother get gunned down for coming home for damn sandwich, mind his own business, not bothering nobody. He gets gunned down on his own steps. Come on with the foolishness, man. But thanks, Elvin. I'm said enough. I'm done, man.
Talk to you.
Thanks, brother. Put me on mute, brother Elliot.
All right. Let's go to 602. 602?
Yes, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Good evening. Brother Marcos here.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right, good brothers. You know, brother Joe, tell it. Brother Joe, tell it, man. You know, these people, you know, all they're doing is putting black faces in high places to launch an attack on black people. Now, you see, they put that lady in HUD. They're putting a black woman in the UN. And they're putting that general there, that black general, the only black general in the U.S. Central Command, they want to put him in the Secretary of Defense position. Anytime you see they do that, they're getting ready to move on the black world.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Because you remember when Colin Powell was there, they put Colin Powell there, they're moving to Iraq. Then Obama was there, they're moving to Libya. Now they put this guy in there so that they could move again. And we see what is developing now in Ethiopia that has 4 army bases over there now, you know, because I'm getting to find out now there are 2 bases there in Djibouti. You have the U.S. have a base there in Djibouti. The Chinese have a base there in Djibouti. Iran has a base in Eritrea. Also, Israel has a base in Eritrea. Mm-hmm. The Russians now have a base in Sudan, Port Sudan. So we don't know who the hell could have triggered that off, that fight off. You see what I'm saying? You know, they could put a drone up and attack Ethiopia, and Ethiopia respond attacking our own people, because we have all these military bases, these foreign military bases in Africa. They need to get the hell out. You know what I'm saying? Because who gonna get these people out? How we gonna get them these people out there? They come there with their guns. They come there with you see what I'm saying? So we have a myriad of problems. Just when we try to get our stuff together, here come the foolishness. You see what I'm saying? So, you know, as I said, this is war. You know, so
and there, as you say, and that's the thing. You know, I see, and I agree wholeheartedly, because what you see is in the office, the people who are being put in place, they are in a open containment of the black world. Exactly. On the continent, because they see these young black people in all these different countries are really, really dissatisfied with the leadership, and they want a new kind of leadership regime that is not tied to the West. And you exactly. see here that young people are dissatisfied with the containment by the police, who is supported yep. by the military. And so this slogan of defund the police here and using Ethiopia, because it's the country that is that country that they had always supported in Ethiopia, is what they're trying to maintain. I mean, they're trying to maintain the power compared to trying to make a national Ethiopian state, right? Which is what was supposed to be developed. So you get a black general, a black UN representative, you get a yep. black somebody out of the UN who's ahead of the UN domestic
policy.
You got a black woman who wanted to be in agriculture so she can feed children, right? Not deal with the farmers, but so she can feed children. But she's going to be in HUD and feed children. And you got a ex-president who's saying, y'all need to stop talking about the police.
Yeah, it's the okey-doke. Yeah, it's the okey-doke, and we keep going for the okey-doke. And after this situation here, we're going to be worse off here in this country, because the small black businesses have been devastated. They're going to be wiped out. So right. we're going to be, you know what I'm saying? We're going to be worse off. it's crazy, brother. Anyway, you know, we just got to keep on keeping on, because this is war. Right? We can't give up, you know. We just got to keep on keeping on. Anyway, good brothers, thank you for your program. I'll mute my phone and continue listening.
Talk to you soon.
All right, good brother.
Let's go to our last call here. 646-646.
Good evening. I'd like to first say thank you. Thank you, Joe Biden, for treating them footstools in the manner in which he treats them. I'd like to take my hat off to him and tell him thank you beforehand, because now it's going to be back to law and order, and the slaves are going to be back on the plantation acting and behaving like they should towards the daddy. So, hey, man, it's a beautiful thing. Because the man has quite obviously showed you he has no respect for you. He's quite obviously showed you he don't respect you at all, you know? So, I mean, hey, do your thing. And that's what he's doing. Anytime a man can talk to you in the fashion that Joe Biden talked to them, he already letting you know he don't give a F about you. Because it ain't nothing you can do. And the bottom line is, it ain't nothing we can do. Because we ain't in no position to do nothing. So that's why he do what he doing. Now, as far as the whole HUD situation, listen, it may not be a bad thing at all that she's in that position because of the situation to where real estate is right now in this country and where it's going. You're going to have a glut of properties available within the next 6 months. You got a serious crisis that maybe somebody like her may need to be in that position, because if she's looking to save the Jew in the process, she may save black folk also. See, we think that she may be there just to take care of the interests of the Jew. Could be true. But the way the climate is economically in this country, she's going to have to help black people. And those, what Biden done told you the other day, is your real new daddy, the Baba Louie. So the bottom line is, I'm not concerned about what she do for the Jew. I don't give a damn about what she do for the Jew. My concern is, what's she going to do for black folks? And the sad thing is, black folks ain't in the position to do anything, receive anything, or take advantage of the situation that the Jew and maybe some other ethnic groups may be able to take care of in regards to the real estate industry.
Isn't that a contradiction? She may be able to do something, but we're not prepared to do anything.
How is it a contradiction? It's an absolute fact. You're in a situation where you've been in this country for over 500 years, and you got Puerto Ricans and other ethnic groups pushing you further and further to the bottom. You deserve a foot in your behind. You deserve whatever happens to us, because the bottom line is, you don't let nobody come into your house, which you built, and overtake you and kick you out of your house. And that's something we don't understand.
Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. You said let nobody come into your house.
Your house.
Huh?
I'll give it to you clear. This is my house before it's the house of a Puerto Rican and any other ethnic group.
Well,
that's what I'm saying. It's the white man's house, but it's my house when it comes to every other ethnic group in this country.
Well, but who
supposed to be in a better position than me and you? But, none of them.
Yeah, but who brings them here? Who brings them here? Wait a minute. Let me finish. Who brings them here? Who puts them in a better position than you?
Who points them
to your communities?
Your daddy puts you in a better position than he do you, because he know you ain't gonna protect the house. He know you're not gonna make them out to be the enemy.
Wait, you mixing apples and oranges now. Go ahead, Richard.
A little bit, Jay. Elijah fall down. If I understand Elliot asking the question, and I'm just using it because I think what we're raising is an important point, especially for where I want to go. You're saying on one hand, the person who owns the house is bringing these people in, but you're saying they're bringing them in because of what we are not doing, not like they're preventing us from owning any part of the house. That's the part that I'm missing. I don't hear you saying there's a deliberate redlining. I mean, the whole thing of having about the mortgage.
Why do they do all those things? Because they know we don't do the necessary things to make them be held accountable for doing those things. It's like this. If you're an owner of a house, if you have a dog, you train your dog to protect your house, right?
Right.
Now, I'm sorry to say this, but in all honesty, the Negro is deemed as the dog.
Right.
And his position should be to protect the house. The white man realized that the Negro is not going to bite the intruder. So what he does is he allows...
What kind of logic? What? Wait a minute. What the hell? What am I listening to? What? Are you kidding?
This is the point that you're missing. Let me tell you what you're missing.
Yeah, we're missing something because I can't take you here. Go ahead.
That there is a competition in regards to who's going to protect the interests of the homeowner. So whereby the Puerto Rican and every other ethnic group is a dog too to the white man. He now wants to see, can he upgrade the protection in his house from the other dog? It's called alpha maleism. So whereby if you're a man and you're the head of your house, if you got a woman, and your woman decides she want to bring another man into your house, what do? You protect your home, right? And you can't protect your home, what do that woman do then? She get rid of you. And see, we don't understand that logic. We've been in the position for years and years and years of one thing, trying to be allies with the other dog that's coming in to take our spot in the house, not realizing that the master don't care about neither one of us. He just wants to be in the position to have the one that's going to protect them.
Black people ain't trying to be in all allies to these other people that's been coming in here. Black people, what black people you know that's been trying to be allies? And I ain't talking about the black misleadership class. I'm talking about the average black people is not trying to be. You got to let me finish. You got to let me finish. Two people can't talk at the same time. I'm not talking about the black misleadership class. The average black person in these urban areas and these other areas is not trying to be allies with these other people. They're not. I don't know what blacks you're talking about. These blacks ain't trying to be. I just said I wasn't talking about.
Who sit down at the master's table.
I just talked
about. That's what I'm talking about.
I just told you I wasn't talking about the black misleadership class. They do what they told.
But the black misleadership class.
Yeah, but they don't represent the masses. They don't represent the masses of black people.
They don't. They do.
No, they do not.
Yes, they do. They represent the masses of black folks in the eyes of society. Whenever there's an issue dealing with everyday people that done been murdered, who do they run to? Ben Crump, Al Sharpton.
Yeah, but you're talking about the eyes of society. You're talking about the eyes of white folks who appointed them. I'm not talking about that. Those people don't represent the interests of the average black person. They don't.
Yes, they do.
Okay.
Yes, they do. Because if they don't, why hasn't there been any type of systematic change in regards to the brutality and the murdering of black people? And now they use defund the police as a narrative to further quell the uprising of the people. It's a game, bro.
It's two things. And this is where I kind of depart once again, because on my core premise is that it isn't because we're not informed. It's because of fear.
And it's not because of just the fear of the Miss Leadership class. It's the fear of Black people of what we would have to do in order to do what you, what I think you're saying, Joe, saying, Jay. And the fear is, using that metaphor of the dog, is that it ain't even about the dog, the dogs that are coming in. It's about the master and the dog relationship. Because it seems to me that the master has been abusing the dog. And the dog, which any beast would, in its natural state, would protect itself against any type of abuse. But since the master, as you, if I understood your metaphor, since the master conditioned the dog to take the abuse, and let's deal with economic development, political sovereignty, power, to exert its own natural power. This master, when we talk about police abuse, we talk about economic disenfranchising of economic opportunity in contracting or in placement and employment. This master has been abusing this dog. And now, and the dog being in this tape shows clearly, not only in this relationship of the Miss Leadership class, but in relationship of the Black community as the, I mean, when we watch, I mean, how many
characters are we watching? The dog is loyal to the master and won't fight the individual that's coming in to take his spot.
Again, you jump to the people coming in who may be alphas, because it ain't all of them coming in. It's certain ones, and I agree with Elliot. They letting them in. They letting them dogs in. Maybe we're not picking up. And when we picked up saying we were going to defend ourselves, protect, look at when we said, you know, this nonviolent thing will get you killed. Look at when we said that. What happened? When we said that, when we said, well, we have the right for, what's that, the Second Amendment? Look what happened. When we took the, they talk about the mobilizing of Black Lives Matter, look what the master did in relationship to, now you see the split between those who are the quote unquote grassroots and those who have been given millions of dollars. And where does this here defund the police come from? It don't come from the Black community.
No, that's
a slogan that came out of the white community. That came out of academia, just like predator, you know, these predators, that didn't come out of what, that came out of the white academy that Biden and them used. That's where that slogan, defund the police, came from. So, let's narrow it down to who are we talking about is the dog that is not actually, who is being abused. Black people are being abused. And we've been abused.
Being abused by the white man with you.
Ain't nobody been abused like Black people.
Except for the
First Nations. But even they had to be almost eliminated because they warred upon the master.
Eliminated. What happened? We came in to take their place to do what? Build a country. Now that the white man. No. But now that they don't have no use for us, what are they doing? They're bringing in others to take the place of Black folks. It's a recycling system in place with the one thing that we don't understand as a people. We have to do two things. Kill the master and come together collectively and do what we have to do. We have to behave in a fashion to where, as I always say to people, that we the only country that would allow someone like a Mitch McConnell, as evil as he is, to walk the planet.
Well, wait a minute. Let me say something.
Mitch McConnell to do what he's doing to everyday people and get away with it.
Well, let me mention this, because that's kind of like a slogan that some black folks say that might necessarily be true about this man don't have any use for us. He has a lot of use for us, and he's using us all the time. We keep his economic. Let me finish. You got to let me finish, man. We keep his economic system afloat. We keep his religion afloat. We keep his sporting afloat. We keep his entertainment floating. We're the ultimate consumer, and they love us for that. We even keep his political system. We energize this political crap that we see here. This Jeffersonian democracy that don't mean S-H-I-T. We even keep that afloat. Oh, the man always did hate us since we've been here. But we've been useful to him, and he's almost mastered the art of using a certain segment of our population against us. That's one thing that we can do, because a lot of people have a defeatist attitude that we can't do nothing against this man. We can bring this guy to his knees anytime we want if we organize. One thing that we can do, we can stop participating in these damn European holidays, and that would almost bring his economic system to collapse. We got to stop talking this crap about we can't do nothing against this man. All we got to do is have leadership that goes along with the grassroots, and then we can, if they start putting, listen, just stop doing this. We got to stop doing that. Stop participating in this. Stop doing that. You'll bring this system to a collapse.
Oh, I agree with you.
Oh,
I agree
okay.
With you. I mean,
so it's plenty of things that we can do. It's plenty of things that we can do.
That's why we got to expose this leadership
as much as we can. Keep a scorecard on who they are. If you don't know who they are, and I'm talking about us in general, if we don't know who they are, then do research on these people and expose them. Expose them to our people that don't know, because that's how they attack our people, through ignorance. And I'm not talking about black people being stupid. They just don't have the vehicles where they can discuss these issues, and they need more vehicles to discuss these issues.
They don't have the mechanism. They don't have the mechanisms in place to put forward the necessary information
exactly
that women should have to be able to identify and break down what you played for the audience this evening in regards to that meeting.
But now wait a minute. Let me use an example of that. Now, this is just one little program that streams, radio program. But what about if other black that have the ears of black people in these cities play those clips and then have intelligent discussion based on what these people are or are not doing? They don't want that. So when you see these big stations, you go in every city and they have stations that blast so-called black entertainment or entertainment geared towards urban, which means black. And they don't talk about nothing. Most of them is playing music or laughing and joking all the time. And then some of the...
I don't listen no more, to be honest with you.
What, say that again?
I don't listen anymore, to be honest with you. I don't even know the last time I heard your brother Steve Harvey. I don't know.
Oh, but I'm just saying, a lot of people, they have them syndicated in every city. Now, you might not listen, but it's a large, well, I don't want to say how large it is. It's a segment of our community that listens religiously.
Right, I know. I used to listen.
And they're on for a reason. Because if you flip the script, if you look at white radio, and they have plenty of white radio, who's a Steve Harvey on white radio? Who's a
Rush Limbaugh?
No. He's no Steve Harvey on white radio.
He's the Steve Harvey of white intellect, as far as someone who has a large audience in the manner in which Steve Harvey does.
Well, and Steve, listen, Steve Harvey is laughing and joking and Amos and Andy satires and all kind of foolishness. Those guys, whether they Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, all those people are on those stations and they discuss issues that's pertinent to their people. They don't discuss it from your perspective. They discuss it from a white perspective and what they feel is in reference to it and have guests on talking about it, whether it's the economy, whether it's defense, whether it's domestic issues, whether it's politics. They're talking about these issues with their white brethren. But we got to flip the script. That's why the 1996 that bill that they passed to buy up all these telecommunications act.
But it's a different what you call them, Elliot. It's white radio is totally different on correct. I may get the wrong word. Trajectory radio. Remember the person who I would say was like Steve Harvey? That person was Howard Stern.
Yeah.
What happened was they got so upset with Howard Stern and his antics, which were basically Steve Harvey, right?
But he was still in that, even with those antics. He was addressing political and social issues.
No. I can tell you, back in that time, it was Howard Stern and one of the most funniest white men in the world. I don't know if you remember him, but man, I used to get a kick out of him by the name of Bob Grant.
But I don't want to talk. I don't want to talk about them. I was just using them as an example. Now you grab for straws. You grab for straws when you said Howard Stern, but that's just one. You got a whole bunch of Steve Harvey wannabes, along with Steve Harvey, that's syndicated all throughout this country, with giggling and laughing and satires all on the radio all the time. That's not just by happenstance. That's for a reason, because they want to keep the black populace ignorant of what's going on.
I agree with you, but what I'm saying is there's a difference in the way that one community radio listenership is developed and another when it comes to black folks. You know, what I'm trying to say to you is white people pay to listen to Howard Stern. They don't have him on terrestrial radio, whereby they have a Steve Harvey to give us something to laugh at, They don't have political radio other than maybe Carl Nelson show. And I mean, Carl Nelson is whatever. But the point of the matter is, when you listen to white radio, they have Rush Limbaugh. They have Michael Savage. They have all of these Glenn Beck. They have all of these individuals that are putting forward a narrative that is entertaining, but it's also political. We don't have that.
But the advertisers are willing to pay to be on those stations where they're not willing to pay to be on politically driven.
But they're not supposed to pay for black upliftment, bro. Why should a white, unless you make certain demands on that corporation, pay to advertise on black radio when they got white people as their priority? I never understood it. It's just like, I don't understand why people get frustrated when white folks don't give them something. You got to make them give you something, or if not, you got to take care of yourself. I mean, just look at the radio station you got in Philadelphia. The last time that I heard anything conscious on that show was the brother that comes on Friday and Professor. Those were the last two. Now if you listen to that radio station, it's a joke. It's a joke. But they supposed to. I'm sorry to say they supposed to do like that. It's our job to advertise on those shows. The sad thing is that we collectively don't come together business-wise to do the necessary things to be able to buy advertisement. That's a collective that we need to figure out, how we collectively come together to buy advertisement, then would change the whole paradigm on how maybe radio is done. I mean, I come from LIB back in New York City in the heyday when they had Gary Bird at the Apollo and all of that, when some things were being really done in radio. The discussions that y'all have weekly are discussions that were being had on LIB. They don't have those discussions no more. So, I mean, I don't know, man. But I'm not mad at Biden. I don't care about what Biden do. I'm not going to get mad at the sister at HUD. I'm gonna be real interested. Now, I think you were saying that they did pick the guy at Agriculture was the one who went after Sherry Sherrod. Was that who they picked for Agriculture?
Yeah, I mean, he did. That was one of the things that that he did. But he wasn't no friend to black farmers. And that was during the period when they were struggling to get repaired from that damage that USDA had did against them. When they come up with that bogus $11 billion supposed to be settlement with African-American farmers.
So if that's the case.
I mean, point-something billion. I'm talking about $11 billion. I wish it was 11, but go ahead.
If that's the case, then shouldn't the so-called Sharptons and the rest of them go after Biden and Harris for allowing this guy to become the head of Agriculture? And here it is, have the sister who Clyburn, who was supposed to be the man, who was supposed to be the grand poobah, the granddaddy, who made it possible for this devil to get in the office. Shouldn't there be some hedge rolling? Shouldn't they now, to make a point, tell them, F you, we're not going to support what's going on in Georgia? That's what real leadership is.
You just heard it. That's why I played it. Why you turn around and ask that question? You just heard it.
And specifically, the guy said, well, you need to do something about the police and the farmers so that we won't lose Georgia. He specifically said that. And he came back and said, I'm not going to do.
Yeah.
Okay, so if he did that, if we were really about
And he wanted to make sure that you understood it. He asked you, did you overstand?
Right.
No, but my question to you, Richard and Elliot, is should we not punish him for that? Should he not be punished for that?
I think you're missing the whole thing.
Yeah.
See, this is what I'm saying, and understand me clearly. These conversations that was leaked, like that conversation there, and it's not just Biden. These white politicians have this type of conversation with black officials all the time. Talk to them like their children, talk down to them. You never hear it. They don't come back and tell you, give you a report on what's going on, give you a heads up, and let you know what these people are doing. They don't. They don't come back and tell you nothing. When they come back into your neighborhoods, they walk around with their chest out so you can say, there's Representative so-and-so, there's Congressman so-and-so, there's Senator so-and-so. They don't come back and tell you nothing. That's my whole point.
Yeah.
This is not leadership. Then they don't work in your interest. This woman that's going into housing, she's not going to work in your interest. She's not. She was placed there by an organization that cultivated her. It ain't like she's going to get in there and all of a sudden turn into.
I'm going to take a wait and see.
Well, good. I mean, ain't nothing wrong with that. I mean,
but the point is, shouldn't they be punished, Elliot and Richard?
Certainly. That's what we've been talking about all the time. On this program, they should be punished.
Yeah, but they can't punish her or them until we're organized. That's the bottom line.
Well, listen, man, hopefully you'll be able to pick this up on Sunday. But they got to be held accountable, man. Me, myself, personally, I wouldn't support what's going on in Georgia. I just let them move it.
Yeah. I don't disagree with what you said. I agree.
Yeah, let them lose it and let the chips fall with their may, because even if they get control of the Senate, Mitch McConnell and the boys are going to cause them nothing but problems, and they got a couple of Democrats that are turning on them at the drop of the hat, and the most obvious one is Joe Manchin, who done already told them, I ain't voting 100% with you on anything or nothing. So the bottom line is, let's see what happens. I just hope we figure out how we could get ourselves collectively to come together to take care of one another, because this pandemic is not over. It's about to get worse. And, you know, a lot of our people are going to be suffering in the months ahead, man. And I see it. I'm witnessing it. I was out of town for the last week, man. And I'm telling you, upstate New York, there's so much property available, man, that it's unbelievable, man. We're in a real serious crisis, man. And I don't think we collectively as a people understand it, man. And I don't know what we're going to do, man. But, hey, man, enjoy your weekend.
All right. Talk to you.
All right.
Richard, come to the end of another program. Interesting conversation, man. Looking forward to to these programs coming up in the next 2-3 weeks. They'll be interesting to the listening audience. Before we leave today, I just want to let you know about tomorrow from 4 to 6, Black Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. That's from 4 to 6 on Time for Unawakening Media. And later on Sunday evening, the Elders of Sankofa with host Alfonso Watkins is from 7 to 9. 7 to 9 tomorrow evening, Saturday evening. And then Time for Awakening is back on Sunday at 7 o'clock. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. A lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware of, I know, the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Problems. Oh.
the children. Soon it will be their chance to try and save the world. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. To save the children.